Hello, I just got back from a trip to the Midwest, and I'm here to report to you on America. Yes, all the way out there to that great inverted bowl of midnight, that vast inverted teacup of pea soup called America, the Midwest, the bowl of it all. Oh. And I'll tell you, they're way ahead of us out there. Seriously, friends, you know, we like to believe that we're ahead of them out there all the time. We do. This is one of the great illusions that both coasts entertain, Cal. That they're ahead, that they've got a stranglehold on truth and all that. Well, let me tell you how far ahead of us they are out there. In Chicago, they have these fantastically hip coffee shops. I mean, they make all the coffee shops down in the village look like coffee shops. You know what I mean? Tea shoppies and, you know, little people. They really have hip coffee shops. In fact, I went at the one hip coffee shop on Wells Street last night. In Chicago, it's in their version of the village down there. You know, I always feel like going into the coffee shops there, you know, and hollering, I'm from the home office, you know, with my beard, and let them know I'm from headquarters, you know, down at McDougal Street. Well, nevertheless, I have a report from the Capitol. But, I mean, it's a very hip coffee shop. And I'm sitting there, I'm knocking down the espresso, you know, and the guys are up there playing the banjos and hollering, and the smoke is swirling, and all the guys from Kenosha are in, and, you know, they're really making the scene big, and all the guys from Appleton are there, and a couple of guys from Milwaukee, and, you know, they're really the great pilgrims on the road to truth. And I'm in this hip coffee shop, and I got to go to John, see? So I go back, and it's the first coffee shop, it's the first place in the world that I ever saw that had three doors. One marked men, one marked women, and the other one marked them. Come on, man, what are you waiting for? What are we going to do? Going to play it? All right, there we go. Right out loud, I said, watch for it quick. Think. Women, men, and them. All right. No, what happened there? She cut off. They're one of the first ones I ever saw that really came right out and said it. You know, I thought, hey, George. And it's funny part, it was the only place where there was a line, that door there. Well, of course, you see, they're way ahead of us out there in a lot of ways. And, I'll tell you, I say it does you good to get outside of New York once and just get out there on the road, really, really hit the road, and to get a feel of what really is going on. You'll never get it if you sit around and watch plays, you know, by Albee and guys. I mean, you'll never find out what's really going on out there. As a matter of fact, I came back with a feeling that there is very little actually being said about America in any of the mediums that I can see around, actually really being said about what America is, you know, what's going on out there in the darkness. And that is everywhere, Siri. Really, it's sure there's a lot said about what's going on in some guy's pad over on the east side. The whole play is about it. But that does not necessarily entail what's going on about out there in America. In fact, I met about seven people, just people walking around the streets, that if you use them in a play, no one who is a playgoer would recognize them as a legitimate person. They do not have any of the motivations. They do not have any of the drives, nor do they seem to have any of the externals of the people who walk around in the plays that are ostensibly about 20th century America. And these, you know, just ordinary people walking around. In fact, out there in the Midwest, much of the stuff that we talk about is very much more naked than the... You know, the world, it's much more naked out there than it is here. You can really read it. For example, I'm sitting there, and I decided to dip into, you know, to real pop culture, to see what it's going on, what's really happening. And, of course, the whole radio is loaded out there with guys singing, "Hello, Mother, hello, Father, this is Izzy at the camper, hello, Mother, hello, Father." And what's so fascinating is that that's being listened to by a whole bunch of people who don't even know what the Eastern Day Camp is like. They never heard from the Catskills. You know, they don't know what it's about. Hello, Mother. Hello, Father. All together. No, don't keep cutting it off. Every time I wave my hand, you just keep it in. Hey. Give up. Stop. I'll tell you what. We get our signal straight. When I go like this, hey, watch. When I go like this, that means cut it. When I go like that, that means bring it up higher, louder. Just keep it in there, see? Okay, all right, all set. It doesn't matter. It's radio, for crying out loud. We don't worry about the big things like TV. Hello, Mother. Hello, Father. Oh, I talk about folk lop. Well, the thing is the nuttiness is spreading in our land by leaps and bounds, great gigantic strides. Everywhere you go, I got on this plane. You see, I have to make a hurry trip. There was an illness in the family, so I have to leap into this plane and go all the way on out and back again. And I try to get a thing, you know, a seat on the plane. And the only thing, it seems that every time you're really in a hurry, the only kind of seat you can get is the champagne red carpet flight. All the others are all booked up. And so 5 minutes later, I find myself going in through a chute, great big tube. You know, you don't walk into airplanes anymore. They inject you into them. The airplane is mainlining people. And, yeah, they inject you right into the airplane. You don't even see the plane. I guess they figure if you don't see the airplane, you won't chicken out. And, you just walk right out of the big building with the air conditioning. The Muzak plays in the tube that they inject you into the plane in, and you just sort of keep right on walking. It's like you're in a big tunnel leading from the Time Life building right to Chicago. And all the while, Muzak accompanies you. You never know you're really on a plane. So I go into this plane, and I'm not on the plane 30 seconds. The plane goes down the runway. There's a fantastic swoosh, and we blow off both the covers off the engine. Yeah, our jet plane, whoo, they fly off all the way down the runway, and they clip a couple of P-86s coming in down. There was a big moment there, and we stop, and the pilot gets on. It was one of the very few times I've ever had any genuine realism come on an airplane. You know, usually it is covered up by all kinds of public relations, but I suspect the day is going to come when every airplane carries aboard a licensed, uniformed PR man who, in case the plane is crashing, We'll get on the monitor system. He'll get on the PA system and tell you, well, ladies and gentlemen, in keeping with our red carpet service, Crunch Draw Airlines now escorts you to heaven. That this is one of our little additional extras, which we have not told you about, that many of you people have wondered about how your manner of death will be. Hardly any of you thought that it would be so exciting. On the way down, we will be serving drinks in the lounge. There will be available for those of you who wish to make the last rites. We have denominational ministers, priests, and rabbis available in the back room there next to the stewardesses. And now, folks, as you'll notice on the way down, you'll notice how the wings out there make that beautiful pattern against the sky. You notice that big one just peeling off now. Well, now, for those of you who wish to take pictures of it, cut, cut, cut. For those of you who wish to take pictures of it, the lounge is now open. Pictures of the crash will be available for guests. All right, just so then it's no problem at all, you know, if you wish to, I suspect, you know, that the day, and here's what happened. The guy says, ladies and gentlemen, this is the captain. We have just experienced difficulty with the linkage system in our turboprop reversal system there. We have just blown the covers off the port motors that you'll notice on the outboard. He's telling us what's wrong. You'll notice we have just blown the covers off the two starboard engines out near the wing tip. Now, this linkage system is very vital to the operation of the plane. We will see if we can get it going. And in the meantime, we suggest you sit down and enjoy yourself, listen to the Muzak, and while we're working on the two starboard port motors there with the reversible prop turbojets, with the linkage, it just went bad and blew the covers 4,000 miles out into Queens, we will sit here and enjoy the Muzak system, and also free lunch is now being served. Well, with that, two mechanics suddenly start banging on it out there. We're looking out, and the guys are trying to eat the braised beef as though nothing's happening. See? They're fooling around. Then they back away from it, and they start the engines again. Whoa! Two covers fly this time in the direction of Babylon. The pilot gets on and says, there will be a brief pause now while we again examine the linkage system in our beautiful new craft. Our craft, which, as you know, is one of the most modern of all airplanes. There you go. The thing about it was he was telling us the real technical dope. Well, we're sitting around, and finally they transfer me to another plane, and by now my senses are all alert. I am ready for almost anything which is about to occur. And I'm not in the plane, and this is a, before we do this story here, because this is a rather involved one, I must speaking of PR jobs, this is WOR AM and FM New York, and this is the friendly station, and for those of you who really are worried, this is the station that worries for you. And, yes, we've got several very cute people coming in. What is the name of those two people? Peter Lindhazer and Mary Healy, or is it Mary Lindhazer and Peter Healy? Very confusing. Those people are very hard to tell apart. Peter Lindhazer and Mary Healy, they've got very bright, shiny white teeth, and they grin better than anybody. They're very good. And they come on every morning now on WOR at 9:15. That's real important stuff. Well, getting back to other less important things, I get on this airplane, you see. and traveling on an airplane in America, of course, I think is a very significant thing in this day and age. This is a jet age. It's an age where things are happening in a tremendously fast way. Things are moving so rapidly that one has to keep a pulse. Or is it a finger on the pulse, or is it a pulse on the finger? You've got to keep in touch. You've got to really look at it to see it, because it's moving so fast sometimes it's just a blur. Well, I get on the plane, and I'm not on the plane 30 seconds. The plane is taking off, and now we're high up over, I guess it was a big chunk of land there, and we're at 37,000 feet. And the captain comes on the phone. He says, once again, he said, this is your captain speaking. We are now at our cruising altitude of 3,795 feet. Our plane is traveling at 610 miles an hour. We have a beautiful tailwind there of 4,000 knots. The outside temperature is minus 60 degrees. The sun is shining. We should have a very good flight all the way to Chicago. We'll be there in about 4 minutes. So those of you who find time hanging heavy on your hands, ask the stewardess. She'll entertain you. She has books there, important books like Reader's Digest, of which, by the way, the lead article was, I lost my entire family in the airplane crash, and then I discovered true happiness. And thank you very much. If you have any questions, please ask your stewardess, and she will relay them on to us up here in the front. Goodbye. And it goes off. While I'm sitting there, and the plane is way up there, and we're sort of sealed in, a little tiny microcosm of American culture, with a K there. And we're sealed in there, and I'm up in the champagne flight section, and they immediately start plying me with champagne. And the red carpet is all rolled out there, and they're bringing me all kinds of stuff, which if my mother knew I'm eating, she would really think that I've gone to hell. And yes, I'm eating this stuff. And we're not, maybe 5 or 6 minutes past that moment when suddenly behind me I hear, and it's the first time I've heard anything like this in a jet plane. You see, I'm up there, sitting there strapped in yet. I'm one of these guys who wears his safety belt all the way. I never take my belt off, even when I'm eating the caviar. I always figure somehow I'm helping the captain if I keep my belt on. Well, I got my belt on, and I'm sitting there eating the caviar and slurping down the champagne. When I hear behind me, believe it or not, I hear this guy strumming his guitar. I'm in the champagne section of the jet plane. Doing, 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 doing. And then I hear this heartbroken voice. It's the voice of America singing, how many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? It echoes throughout the cabin there, and the sound of the champagne glasses are clinking all around us, and the sound of the caviar being slopped can be heard all around us. And I hear this tortured voice, how many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Well, I figure, for crying out loud, a lonesome traveler on the jet, 707. On its way to Chicago in the champagne cocktail section. And I turn around, and here's this angry beat-looking kid sitting there with his battered guitar case. This angry beat-looking kid. You know the kind that got vaguely all tanned from Fire Island, where the pilgrimage is at its most greatest bit, you know? And he's vaguely tanned, and he's wearing a torn pair of Levi's, very carefully torn in all the right places. It costs his old man $70 for that pair of Levi's. They're all torn and all faded and worn, you know, like they've been worn building the Union Pacific
fighting the terrible seas of the depression, scrabbling out of the sand a hard piece of bread for a poor, honest man just to live in his land, just to try to love and just trying to understand and trying to live with his fellas, a poor old white dove a sailing. Flying on many roads must the man walk down before they call him a man. And this guy's singing out there, and the tears are just streaming down between the champagne glasses. How many seas going must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Well, it's echoing out there throughout the champagne section. There wasn't a dry eye. And there were 700 other college students there who were just empathizing like mad with the plight of the common man fighting against the fantastic forces of evil, the forces of a decadent society. And this young kid is on his way to the junior class at the University of Iowa. All the way, Jep, all the way, champagne flight. All the way it's been all of his life. How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Oh, the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. He sat there, tears a coursing down those rough-hewn, hardened, tanned cheeks of his, hardened from so many weeks out on Fire Island, so many weeks out on Cape Cod, so many hard, terrible, awful, scrabbling weeks at Bar Harbor. How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Then he gets real bugged. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. Little chick bends over and says, more champagne, sir? Says, yeah, fill it up. How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Oh, the answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. Well, I'm sitting there, you know, and all of a sudden I realize that today's lonesome traveler travels only first class. And more I realize that the plight of the common man is now in the hands of the uncommon man with plenty of jack and two or three good fat credit cards in his back pocket provided by his old man. And, one of the most significant things about this whole suffering traveler bit that is is traveling throughout the colleges today is that the higher a person goes in actual social status, the more he emphasizes with the strugglers. Of course, he does it in the back end of the jet there on the way to Chicago. And he does it, and more and more, you'll find that the folk groups, and boy, I certainly put quotes around them, are the most clean scrubbed, the most obviously well-heeled people in your life. You can never imagine Peter, Paul, and Mary ever hungry, and Joan Baez for that matter. But nevertheless, how many roads must the man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? Well, it reminded me of something that I recalled vaguely from my European history. Just before the great French Revolution, the people, there was a great revival, a tremendous upsurge of interest and empathy for the peasant, for the downtrodden. And it got to the point where Marie Antoinette, for example, would spend almost all of her weekends dressed as a milkmaid, a simple peasant of the fields. And out in the woods around Versailles, they built many simple peasant cottages that were built by the nobles of the period. And they went there to live the simple life and to sing the praises of the simple, singular man, living in his hard life, his stony life, tilling from the soil of France the simple viands of existence. And I thought, well, you know, and they really did emphasize with them. And there was a movement led by Rousseau, the Rousseau naturalism movement, which we are, I believe, undergoing now. It's interesting to note, I found in my own experience, that the lower a man really goes on the social scale as far as his chances, the less he identifies with the folk singers. Until finally you will find no guys in the slums are singing, "How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind." The guy sitting in the slums is just doing, you know, as best he can. And I wonder what he thinks when he looks up and he sees a guy sitting in the rear end of a jet winging on its way towards Cedar Rapids, or winging on its way towards UCLA, or winging on its way towards the University of Michigan, or Smith, or Bennington, or Princeton, or Harvard, or Yale. A kid sitting there with his torn jeans coming out of the wilds of Bar Harbor. How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? I keep thinking of Marie Antoinette. And, of course, Americans are not historically conscious people. They never can see America in any historical context other than America. They do not realize that the history of foreign countries is also the history of man in action. And you cannot say, well, that was France. No, those were people. And those were people at a certain point in their history when certain things had happened. Certain inexplicable things, but not really. Just certain things that happen in any society at a certain point in that society's existence where the life became so unreal to so many people that they began to long hungrily for the life that they considered real, the life of the men who are tilling the soil or fighting the battle, fighting the elements. And most of the kids that are singing these, as an interesting point I've noticed, are inveterate cab riders. I'll tell you, they'll sing, "I'm a lonesome, lonesome traveler along the hard, rocky road of life," sitting in the back seat of a yellow cab. "He's a lonesome, lonesome yellow cab rider, a-traveling on the old man's diner's club car. It's a hard, hard road to hoe, a hard road." Yeah, that's a giant thing. And have you ever seen a more clean-limbed, obviously well-fed crew than the Kingston Trio? Fighting that good fight. "Yeah, we're just little simple men. We're fighting against the force of evil, that terrible society. How many roads must a man walk down?" And it's got to all be done in a kind of tongue-in-cheek, funny way. Because if anybody ever starts singing this stuff the way it really is, a lot of people are going to stop drinking their drinks, and a lot of young guys are going to start worrying. And so it all has to be done with this kind of talk. You know, it's a kind of college syndrome where everything is approached in an academic way, even suffering, particularly suffering. And so you develop this college quaver. There's this kind of ecclesiastical zeal about all of the so-called folk groups, which really are, in a sense, a kind of neo-Andrew Sisters organizations. Instead of Roll Out the Barrel, they're singing, "How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man?" Today, if you get together four guys and you work up a good vaudevillac, all you got to do is say freedom fast enough and you become significant. And you become very, very highly controversial, except that you're never controversial, of course. And that is part of this neo-Rousseauian romanticist movement. It's that hardly any, if you notice, hardly any of the groups actually come out of the suffering classes. In fact, I don't know of any. I really don't know of any. Certainly, if they have, they haven't made it. Don't bring me the Clancy brothers, Dad. Oh boy, that really is one of the more I think one of the more intriguing aspects of this whole general thing. Part of it, of course, is that, and of course, you're going to hear people say, well, that's not, you're being unfair that they're bringing the problem to the people. At least they're doing that. No, I say no. They're reducing the problem to entertainment. They're making the problem entertaining. And so when a man, quote, is involved in the problem, or a girl, quote, I'll never forget one of the folk singers going out to Forest Hills and drawing 18 billion people out there at about $5 a head and pretending to be a social fighter for good. You know, that's an interesting kind of fighting. I like that kind of fighting. That's the kind I like to get involved in, you know, where there's plenty of B.O. And you get reviewed by Variety and you get recorded and there's plenty of B.O. there, too, all the way up and down the line. And it winds up a really... I think, in a way, a kind of dynamic sort of decadence, when genuine problems are made into bits, and are acted out by people to whom those problems have always been only very, very abstract things. One of the reasons this is so is because everybody, when he's an adolescent or when he's a kid of any kind, whether he's a 50-year-old kid or not. Anybody who is speaking of Bertrand Russell, but whenever you're an adolescent, when you're an in between, you're having trouble. You're in between one kind of life and another. When you're in transit, you have a tendency to confuse your own problems, like the kid's old man wouldn't give him a Thunderbird, and the kid's old man just doesn't understand. You have a tendency to confuse your problems with suffering humanity. And as long as you can, you feel that you can identify with the underdog because your old man, the chicks don't dig you. You know, you're 9 years old and the chicks never dug you. They never dug you at all because you're short and skinny, you know, and you got big fat glasses. And for some reason or other, the chicks don't dig you. So by George, by the time you're 15, you're either a hip comic lashing out at rotten, decadent society, or you're sitting on the back end of a plane on your way to your social studies classes singing, "How many roads must a man walk down before they call him a man? Ho, ho! How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the wind? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind." Yeah. And you find angry. Sure, they're calling up angry. Whenever you touch the nerve, they're always angry. But I'm a little worried about people who make of reality a showbiz gambit. "Hey, Charlie! Hey, Charlie! Oh, boy, will you hear this one. Hey, Charlie, sing that great one about the lynching. Yeah, that's a terrific one. Yeah, about the lynching. Yeah." "Oh, it was a cold and stormy Saturday night, and they chased me down to the tracks. They had in their hands that great big rope, and they weren't going to let me go back." "Yeah, sing that great, that wonderful one about the beating in the darkness with the feathers and the rope. Okay." And it goes on and on and on. You wonder where this is going to stop. Not that I it's a problem, I believe, of false empathy. It's not a problem of empathy. I am not arguing with people who believe in the fantastic struggles going on. But I wonder how many of them do. Really, I'm curious. I wonder how many of them would give up their champagne flights. You know. I wonder how many of them will give up those gigantic box offices at those places where they sing their hard-hitting, beautifully delineated pleas for tolerance and simplicity and poverty. I'm not so sure. Well, of course, then they would say, well, I've got this rotten agent. You know, what can I do about it? I'd love to sing at your organization, but they're crying out loud, I got this agent. He just won't let me do nothing. And I'll tell you, you just send us a letter about it. And, well, if you give us a very decent guarantee, I'll be there. I'd love to sing that one. And, by the way, I got a new record coming out. I remember one night, the first time I ran into this phenomenon, I'm working in a nightclub, and one of the acts, of course, on the bill was a folk singing group. And, of course, they were all simple wayfaring travelers, traveling on this hard, rocky road of life. And the gambit was always this kind of thing. In a darkened light, the man looking out into the darkness there, and, of course, this was back in the days before any of you had even dug folk music, I hate to tell you, some time ago. And so he would look out into the darkness. He'd look around there, and he'd go, this is one of the gambits, by the way, to tune your guitar in front of the audience, which makes it seem like you're just one of the boys. And ding, 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 ding. You talk to each other. You see, C minor, minor, minor. Da, 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 da. Now I would like to sing a song of social protest, friends. I'd like to sing a song that kind of tells us how it is and what we feel. Then a long silence. How many roads must a man walk down? A fool they call him a man. Oh, by the way, folks, this wonderful social protest tune is available on our new record called Damn It to Hell. It's a wonderful wonderful record that we just turned out, and for all of you folks that would like to pick up this record, it's on the protest label number 142, and it's called Damn It to Hell, a brand new record of the Lonesome Traveler 4. And now let's get on with the second verse. How many seas must a white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand, hit its aches and C minor, okay, all right. You know how Juck is, it's just a damn radiator here. The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind. And now we'd like to turn our attention again to another phase of the social protest movement, friends. By the way, our record album, for those of you that missed it in the back, I noticed there was a waiter passing by there. The album is called Damn It to Hell. And it's done by the Lonesome Weary Traveler 4. And the title of it actually was recorded at the University of Syracuse, called the Lonesome Weary Traveler Syracuse 4 at Syracuse, and a big hootenanny. And it's very hard-hitting stuff. And we're now going to sing another one here called That Rotten Old Lynching Gang. All righty now, let's go. Why don't you all join in the back there? All you kids out in the back, you join in. Now let's sing that wonderful old lynching bee song that tells how it really is. Oh, they're coming after me tonight with a rope. They're coming after me tonight with the tar. They're coming after me tonight with the feathers. And they ain't gonna quit till I'm hung. Oh, they ain't gonna quit till I'm hung.
Tingling,
wow.
I know this song don't mean a thing.
Oh, that song don't mean a thing. All together now, kid. Ba 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 ba.
What?
very, very good song. Now, I'd like to go on and sing another one fine old tune that has come out of the mountains of Virginia, and it goes all the way back into the early... By the way, this is... Yeah, it comes out of the mountains of Virginia. And this is about that little girl that all of us have lost somewhere in the past. That little girl that all of us have been crying and weeping for. That little girl. And this one, by the way, was written just at the close of the Civil War. That great war between the North and the South, which, as you know, has not yet been solved. Going. This little tune is called Come Back to Me, Marie, My Little Baby. Oh, come back. Come back to me, Marie. My little baby, come back to me. Bum, bum, ba, da, bum, rock, rock. All right, oh, yeah, that's enough. Hope you get the idea. All right, George, I'm getting to be an authentic folk artist. Huh? That's right. Yes, your old cousin Chuck coming your way, friends. Got a lot of fine tunes, a lot of fine sponsors we've been wanting to tell you about. Doing, 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 doing. Ring a ding a ding a ding a dong da da, ring ding da da, ring ding da da, ring da da, ring ding 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 da ding, ba 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 bum 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 ba da 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 bum 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 ba da 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 bum 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 ba da 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 bum 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 ba da ba da ba da da bum 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 ba da 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 bum bum. Yeah. If nothing else, I got vitality. Oh, boy. Yeah, well, going out to the Midwest teaches you a lot of things. For example, one thing about... Any of you, listen, any of you guys got a good coffee shop gig out there? I'm ready to go. Seriously, I'll show up there with my three-string guitar. Ready to sing and ready to talk and ready to do them talking blues. Oh, one time I was down in the three-eye league playing my heart out. I was a slave to that old reserve clause. A slave down in the Class B League. Bum, 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 ba da 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 bum, 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 ba da da bum, 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 ba bum, ba 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 bum, 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 ba 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 bum, bum, ba ba da. A slave in the Three-Eye League. Oh, yeah, I got all kinds of them. You want to hear that? About the day I lost 2-1. Pitching three-hit ball. Oh, the lights was dark and hazy. And on the bus going to Moline, I could feel it deep in my bones and my heart. Tonight I was going down to defeat. I said to Ruthie before I got on the bus, "Darling, won't you pray for me? My slider's gone, my curve is hanging, and my fastball ain't what it used to be. Oh, baby, I ain't gonna make it to the big time. Tonight we're playing the Moline Tigers, and I know it's my last game. Oh, Ruthie, Ruthie, come back, come back. Ruthie, come back to me. Your poor old minor leaguer has bought it all the way. Well, that night I stood on that old mound, looking down at the first man up. The leadoff man's name was Butch. And he batted from a low-slung, double-bended crouch. I spit into my glove. I got the sign. It was calling for my hanging curve. I knew that that's the one I could really throw. There's nothing hung like my curve. I spit, looked back at third base, spun round and looked at first. I took one look at the second sack, and I knew tonight would be the last time I'd see him empty. So I took a good long look, and I wound up and I let it go. Oh, the ball spun hard and straight and true, just like my curveball always did. It never bent to the left or right, but hung like a great big picture in the sky. He swung, the bat moved like a shot through the dark. He missed, by God, he missed. And then I knew that that leadoff man named Butch was a bigger phony than even yours truly. Well, I started to work on the second man up. The second man's name was Stan. He took one look at my slider man and knew he'd come to dinner. And they were serving up big fat turkeys, big fat thick greasy ham sandwiches, and lovely mince pie. His Louisville slugger moved like a shot in the dark. Oh, man, off the scoreboard, that ball did bounce. Afore I turned round to look at the outfield, he was standing on third base, not even breathing hard. Well, I looked into the lights, my dear. I looked into the dark. I looked into the darkness, dear, and I saw your lovely face. Oh, Ruthie, Ruthie, please tell me more about our long-lost love, dear, down in the three-eyed league for fair. I'm a-riding the bus tonight, my dear, for Rockford. The Rockford Sharks are waiting. I'm pitching the first half of a doubleheader, my dear, and I think tomorrow night, oh, Ruthie, my dear, my Ruthie, dear.